This program is provided by a trusted partner of the church and is educational, inspirational, and uplifting. It does not necessarily represent the official position of the church.
The brothers and sisters of Joseph seem to have a desire to have this connection with their Utah cousins. And so they did welcome them when they came and visited.
The brothers and sisters of Joseph Smith, next on the Joseph Smith Papers.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Channel now presents the Joseph Smith Papers.
K-Jazz Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of scholars and historians as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers. And now your host, Glenn Rawson.
Last week we told you about Joseph Smith Sr. and Lucy Max Smith and their enduring devotion to the work of the Restoration. Tonight we'll continue that narrative with Mother Smith and the heartrending events that surrounded the martyrdom of her two sons, Joseph and Hiram, in June of 1844. Then, later on in the show, we'll talk about Joseph Smith Jr.'s brothers and sisters. What of them and of their place in Mormonism?
Sherilyn D. Howcroft.
Lucy was living with Emma Smith at the time of the martyrdom. The bodies of Joseph and Hiram were brought back to Nauvoo, and the family gathered to the bodies of their husbands, their brothers, their sons. In this point of agony, Lucy cries out, my God, why hast thou forsaken this family? And she hears a voice respond, I have taken them to myself that they might find rest. Sarah Granger Kimball, several days after the martyrdom, came to visit Lucy. And she recalls coming into this room and approaching Mother Smith. And she specifically stated this, I approached her, meaning Mother Smith. She extended her trembling hand towards me, which I clasped in silence. She, biting her lips, motioned me to be seated by her side, I think for 3 minutes. The silence was only broken by smothered sobs from various parts of the room, during which time the pressure of her trembling hand and the heaving of her swollen bosom spoke, as it were, volumes to my heart. It was then that I vainly wished for power of speech to console the afflicted. At last I ventured to say, Mother Smith, how are you today? She replied, oh, I can't tell, for my poor heart does ache so. How could they kill my poor boys? Oh, how could they kill them when they were so precious? I am sure they would not harm anybody in the world, but they would have done everybody good. There was poor Hiram. What could they kill him for? He was always mild. Then turning to Lucy, her youngest daughter, she said, don't you know, Lucy, how mild Hiram always was? A month after the murders of Joseph and Hiram, Samuel died as well from incidents related to outrunning the mob. So within a matter of months, Mother Smith had lost three sons.
Kyle R. Walker.
Out of the 11 members of the family, five are left. You got Lucy Mack Smith, Mother Smith, her three daughters, and William. That's all that's left. So out of those nine siblings, you have the three sisters and one surviving son, William, who's on a mission to the east at the time of the martyrdom and will remain there for over a year, which I think is significant.
Wilford Woodruff went to see Mother Smith in August of 44. He said that Mother Smith's heart was broken and that she couldn't understand the viciousness and the meanness of the Gentiles toward her family. She begged Wilford Woodruff to give her a blessing. And Wilford Woodruff, of course, complied. In that blessing, he referred to her as the greatest mother in Israel. Specifically, he blessed her with this. The sons thou hast born and cherished are the most noble spirits that have ever graced humanity or tabernacled in flesh. Thou hast lived and stood to see the fall of thy sons by the rage of Gentile hands, and like an impenetrable rock in the midst of the mighty deep, thou hast remained unmoved until God has given thee the desires of thy heart in seeing the keys of the kingdom of God held in the hands of thy posterity, so planted in the earth that they shall never be taken from it until he reigns whose right it is to reign. He further goes on to tell her that she will be held in honorable remembrance in the hearts of the righteous. And she has been. She is still referred to as Mother Smith.
In the fall of 1844 and through part of 1845, Mother Smith, with the help of Howard and Martha Jane Corey, commenced the writing of her history.
We know that the history was possibly completed by July of 1845, when copyright was obtained in Illinois for the publication of that manuscript, but definitely by October of 1845. In a conference, a church conference in that year, Mother Smith stood up and told the congregation that her history was finished, and she desired for it to be printed before they went out west. There was a motion in the conference to bring Mother Smith out west. And Mother Smith made the mention that she would like to go out west, but she asked that her bones be, after she had passed away, that her bones be taken back to Illinois, where she could be buried by her family.
Mother Smith always maintained the most amicable of feelings towards the saints in the West.
During the 1850s, there were several Latter-day Saints from the Salt Lake Valley, who went back to Illinois to visit Mother Smith. There was Hannah Tapfield King, a poetess and author, Horace Eldridge, Frederick Piercy, who is well known for the lithograph that he completed of Lucy, and Enoch Tripp. Hannah Tapfield King recalls seeing Mother Smith propped up in bed with pillows, and how she was so impressed with her, for she was no ordinary woman. And she, being the poetess that she was, she talked about how the only way she could describe Mother Smith was in poetry, and she felt like prose just wasn't adequate to describe Mother Smith. But in the process of her interaction with Mother Smith, a mother's blessing was bestowed upon the group. Those were Lucy's words. Probably one of the most exuberant interactions that Lucy had with these visitors was with Enoch Tripp. Enoch came into her room. She was in bed and very feeble. And he told her who he was. And she rose up in bed. She put her arms around his neck and kissed him. And she exclaimed how happy she was to see him, and she could die in peace now that she had beheld his face from the valleys of the mountains. In conversation with Tripp, she told him that for 2 years she had desired to come out west, but there were those who prevented her from doing so. The implication, although never specified, was Emma. In their conversation, she told Tripp to specifically give her love to Brigham and Heber and all of the other righteous saints, for her heart was with them.
Lucy Mack Smith died May the 14th, 1856. Her grandson, Joseph III, was with her at the last.
Grandmother died the morning of the 14th of May, last easily and with her senses to the last moment. And we trust she has no wish to return from the bourne. She appeared somewhat fearful of death a little while before he came, yet appeared resigned afterwards. I sat by her and held her hand in mine till death relieved her. There is a sense in Lucy Mack Smith's life of an incomparable, inordinate amount of faith in God. She was absolutely certain that God would fight her battles, that he would assist the Smith family in all that they did. She records in her history, as her final and concluding remarks to the history, "The testimony which I have given is true and will stand forever, and the same will be my testimony in the day of God Almighty, when I shall meet him concerning whom I have testified, where the brief authority of the unjust man will shrink to nothingness before him who is the Lord of lords and God of gods, and where the righteousness of the just shall exalt them in the scale wherein he weigheth the hearts of men." Above all else, Lucy was faithful. That is part of what made her so extraordinary, is the amount of faith that she possessed. And her crowning jewel was her family. It always was, and it always would be. She was so convinced of the truthfulness of the work that Joseph was doing that she had nerve beyond what most women would even dare.
There were 11 children born to Joseph Sr. and Lucy Mack Smith. Of those 11, 9 survived to adulthood. The following represents some of what we know about those children.
Jeffrey O. Johnson.
One thing we do know about Joseph's family is that they were very supportive of his calling. His oldest brother, Alvin, who had been trying to get a new home for the family and trying to get the family in a better condition, did support Joseph, but he died before Joseph was able to get the plates and start his work. Hiram, the next brother, 5 years older than Joseph, was really an important part of the whole work of Joseph Smith, supportive through their whole lives, and then of course they ended up being killed together. He was seen as a counselor to Joseph Smith in the first presidency. He was seen as an assistant president and then the presiding patriarch when his father died. So Hiram was always there to support Joseph. The next child was Sophronia, a sister. She was married when the church was organized, but she and her husband also became involved with the church and was an important part of the church.
For a time, Sophronia considered moving west with the saints.
She was married to a man named William McClary, and he was preparing a wagon to go west. He had actually gone on to winter quarters and was coming back for Sophronia when we think he died. And so he passes away, and Sophronia then chooses to stay with Mother Smith and the sisters there, and William as well.
Samuel Smith was also a real support. He had been the first missionary to go out with the Book of Mormon. The sad thing about him is he rode to Carthage when he heard about his brother's death. Was there to help them load the bodies on the wagons. When he got back to Nauvoo, he wasn't feeling very well. He was ill, and he died within a month. So the only one boy that was left of the family was William.
William Smith was 6 years younger than Joseph Jr. and was called as a member of the first quorum of the 12 apostles in this dispensation.
He and Joseph often had conflict, and sometimes their father had to break that up, as we know from Joseph Smith's journal.
William had a great influence on the family, I think. William struggled with authority throughout his life. And as he returns to Nauvoo, May 4th, 1845, now remember, that's about a year after the martyrdom. So he's not there for, you know, the mantle of Joseph von Brigham, any of those kinds of experiences. But he does declare his full support of Brigham Young while he's in the East. He's presiding over the eastern branches. His wife is very sick with dropsy. He manages to get her back to Nauvoo, and she dies within 3 weeks of returning to Nauvoo. William then has a difficult summer. He's ordained patriarch of the church, but struggles with authority throughout that summer. Although he's ordained patriarch and has supported Brigham Young as the successor of Joseph Smith and recognizes him as president of the Quorum of the Twelve at the time, eventually his position shifts. Initially, William Smith is promoting Joseph Smith III as the successor to his father. William Smith does practice plural marriage, and when his followers find that out, they no longer follow William. And so eventually then he loses most of his following, settles down, doesn't practice polygamy after the year 1857 that we're aware of, settles in a place called Elkader, Iowa, and that's where he'll spend the remaining 40 years of his life. Does join the RLDS Church. Negotiates with Joseph Smith III on a position that I don't think he was ever content with, but does become a missionary in the Reorganized Church.
Catherine was born in 1814 and lived longer than any of the children of Joseph and Lucy Mack Smith.
She married and was supportive of Joseph, lived in Illinois after the saints left.
Her husband was outside of the church during that time period and was not a faithful member of the church at the time.
She always had a testimony of her brother. She told these missionaries how much, how fond she was of the missionary program, and it reminded her of the early days of the church, that she had joined the Reorganized Church also. Brigham Young helped her and her family. When she asked for help, they needed money to when she was older, and she and Brigham Young sent her money to help her because she was part of Joseph's family.
I'll just tell you one story about Catherine, who stays right in Hancock County, Illinois. In fact, she settles right near some of those who had marched to Carthage. And if you can imagine how that would be, be a sister of Joseph Smith and still stay in that same area. They experienced much persecution staying there. Their children were even shot at one point. Weren't killed, but they were shot at by some of the neighbors. And they were shunned socially. There's one account of Catherine's son Solomon, who was dating a young woman there and hoping to marry her when her father broke it off because of Solomon's tie to Mormonism. And so it just broke his heart. He never got over that.
Don Carlos Smith was born in 1816 in Norwich, Vermont, just before the family moved to Palmyra.
Let me talk about Don Carlos Smith. Don Carlos Smith, Joseph Smith's youngest brother, I think had in common with Joseph a charismatic personality. People seemed to be drawn to Don Carlos Smith. In fact, at the he serves a mission with his father in the fall of 1830. So at the age of around 14 years old, he goes with his father to visit Joseph Smith Sr.'s family. And there they make contact with John Smith, whose son is George A. Smith, later in the first presidency of the church. And they have much success among Joseph Smith Sr.'s siblings, as well as his parents. Emma said of Don Carlos Smith that when outfitted in his Nauvoo Legion uniform and on horseback, he was the most handsome man she had ever seen. 6'4", very good looking, and was well respected among the saints. His greatest contribution to the church comes through his efforts as a printer. He works on several of the newspapers, the Elder's Journal, Messenger and Advocate, and the Times and Seasons at Nauvoo. He's also a key player in the publication of the third edition of the Book of Mormon in 1840. He and his printing partner, Ebenezer Robinson, lead out in printing the Book of Mormon, and there's some miraculous events that transpire with that publication.
As a young man in his mid-20s, he died, leaving a widow and children. His widow married a non-Mormon and went to California. And his daughter, Josephine, became an important literary person in California.
The youngest of the Smith children was Lucy. She was born in 1822 while the family lived in Palmyra.
She married in Nauvoo. Joseph Smith performed the marriage when she was 19. She raised the largest family. She had 9 children. And she took care of her mother. After the saints left, her mother lived with her until near the end of her life when her mother moved in with Emma and ended her life there with Emma.
The Smiths, they were a people of exceptional stature for the time, and not just spiritually, but physically as well. They were tall, with a propensity for sports.
People describe the Smith family as extra tall, big, the brothers as big men, and also the sisters as tall women. So even throughout their lives, they're seen as tall people.
William Smith was 6'3" in his stocking feet, according to his son. There's also accounts. There's an account from Joseph Smith III that says that Joseph Smith the Senior was surpassed by none of his sons in height. So it's hard to know. And we get some different accounts, and sometimes those accounts tend to grow with the posterity. Yeah. They want them to be taller and taller, but we have some early accounts that the Smiths were tall men. If you saw the Smiths coming down the street in Palmyra, that was a force to be reckoned with. Very strong, athletic. In fact, there's some neat accounts that have survived of Joseph Smith Sr. wrestling with his son Joseph, and that Joseph Sr. Was famed as a wrestler and never lost but one person, says the accounts, and I don't know if that's true or not, but wrestling was a family tradition in the Smith household, and that there was one occasion when Joseph Sr. was again wrestling with his namesake son, and Father Smith was quite distraught because Joseph Jr. had thrown him that particular time.
The Smith sisters, Sophronia, Catherine, and Lucy, they maintained a close relationship throughout their lives, often visiting one another, tending each other's children.
There's one account. Catherine is very poor. She's a widow. And Sophronia, her older sister, steps in and offers to raise one of her children to help out financially. And so she takes this son of Catherine's, provides him with an education, both common and cadet schools, and he forms a very close attachment to his Aunt Sophronia. Emma's given a lot of credit for taking care of Lucy Mack Smith in her final years, and rightfully so. But Lucy Millikan actually cared for, Lucy Millikan, daughter Lucy, actually cared for Mother Smith for a number of years as well after the martyrdom. And those sisters were there with Mother Smith in the 1850 census. They're all living together out in a town called Webster, formerly Ramus, during the Nauvoo years. They're all living together out there. And so they maintained a close affinity for one another. In fact, Catherine, Joseph Smith's sister Catherine, her sons acted as pallbearers at Emma's funeral. And so they stayed close to Emma as well, and even named some of their children. One of their children were named for Emma. And so they maintained those relationships out in the Midwest after the martyrdom.
Now, while most of the Smith family remained in the Midwest after 1846, Mary Fielding Smith, the widow of Hiram, on the other hand, she went west to Utah taking her children, as did the son of Samuel Harrison Smith. He also went west.
Samuel H.B. Smith is his name, his only son, did come west and serves several missions for the church. And so he comes west. A sister of his eventually comes west later on and is rebaptized when she comes out west. But that's about it out of those children.
The brothers and sisters of Joseph seem to have a desire to have this connection with their Utah cousins. And so they did welcome them when they came and visited. George A. Smith, Brigham Young's counselor, was their first cousin. His father was Joseph Smith Sr.'s brother. And Samuel Smith's son, Samuel Harrison Bailey Smith, visited them a lot as they went through. And they talked about how they bore their testimony of Joseph.
While the children of Joseph and Lucy Mack Smith maintained amicable relations with their cousins in the West, the grandchildren did not. And unfortunately, some of the Utah cousins reciprocated.
These brothers and sisters' children mostly all became very active in the reorganized church. And that there they build a kind of a wall between them and their Utah cousins. So often their children would argue with their cousins that came. And these children helped support the anti-polygamy things that were going on in Utah, which was causing lots of problems. So that caused... It seems like the first generation didn't have the antagonism that the second generation developed. Joseph Smith Sr.'s brothers, who were members of the church, followed Brigham Young to Utah. His brother John Smith became the presiding officer here in Utah when Brigham Young went back to winter quarters to pick his family up. John Smith's son, George A. Smith, was an apostle and became Brigham Young's counselor, also church historian. Brigham Young depended on George A. Smith to kind of have the relationship with the Smith family. But there were other Smith families that came to Utah, including his brother Asa, who came here also.
When her husband was murdered at Carthage, Emma Smith had four small children and one on the way. And her oldest was only 13.
And the first concern, of course, for Emma was, how do I provide for these children?
Next week on the Joseph Smith Papers, the children of Joseph and Emma Smith. I'm Glenn Rawson. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Joseph Smith Papers here on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.